Case number 20-4026 in the case of Kenjo Outdoor LLC versus Jack Marshbanks et al. Arguments not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Blakelock for the appellant, you may proceed.
May it please the court. My name is Rich Blakelock. I'm here on behalf of Kenjo Outdoor. I'd like to thank the court for allowing me to be present here, pro hoc. I reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. And excuse me. I intend to make 3 points today. Number one, commercial speech is entitled to some protections against governmental prior restraint. Number two, the regulation at issue here is content-based and as such should have procedural safeguards. And third, if I have time, the compliance provision is not narrowly tailored under either strict or intermediate scrutiny.
Can I ask you about why? I'm not sure I follow your 28J letter, because it seems to me you're still seeking an injunction, right?
Correct.
Wouldn't it be the new law which you're trying to enjoin or rule?
Well, I think we'd probably have to start from scratch with the new law. I would agree with you that we're not trying to enjoin the old law because it's no longer a law.
To get an injunction, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but it has to be the new law, right?
Well, I would say that we'd like to be enjoined against application of the old law because we suffered as a result of it. Whether that means we can then put up our advertising at the sign, which is still there.
That law doesn't exist anymore.
It doesn't. I recognize that, so which probably then gets us primarily to damages.
But are you asking us... I mean, I don't know, we haven't really gone through this, but are we allowed to look at the new law and decide whether that ought to be enjoined or not? Or is that something we have to remand, or?
I would think it has to be remanded, frankly. We haven't had the opportunity to develop argument on it, certainly, you know, other than through the short letters that we did.
Do you agree that the new law is not, well, I don't know whether I'm asking you to agree or not agree or what, but it's not a commercial speech regulation anymore, is it? I mean, it's based solely on the speaker, whether the speaker is getting paid or not. Is that right?
That is correct. I think that's
so it's just targeted at speakers, not at the kind of speech?
I think that's probably correct. I mean, I haven't sort of fully studied that and thought about it.
But in other words, if I had the same billboard, if I had the road to hell billboard on the way to Columbus, somebody paid for it, somebody doesn't pay for it, it's the same billboard, but it would only depend on whether somebody was getting paid to put it up. Is that right?
I think that's right under the new regulation, yes.
But you think that we ought to remand?
Yeah, I think there's issues there. I mean, again, I haven't, it came in recently. We haven't fully briefed it. I think there may be issues with that also, especially as it relates to the sort of second prong about whether or not it's narrowly tailored, et cetera. And similarly.
So you agree you're not entitled to an injunction at this point?
On the old regulation, I would say yes, because it's no longer in effect. But I do think we have.
So you basically just want a declaration that the old law was bad, if we could do that, and your main argument, I take it, is the damages argument.
Correct. I mean, that's what we're left with, yes, because of that.
We don't usually give advisory opinions, do we?
Well, but I mean, if the district court concluded that because the prior ordinance, which I do believe we're vested in that, because we built the board, we started advertising on it, but because the board... there was no prior restraint because it's commercial speech, therefore we didn't have a damages claim because of qualified immunity, et cetera. So it basically took the one argument, which is that it's okay to have a prior restraint on commercial speech, and therefore you don't have a damages claim, and I don't think that those two go away because of this, because we did vest in, I think under the law that we cited, in the...
Right, maybe all that should be sorted out by the district court now that the law has changed.
That may be true, but
for purposes of the damages claim, looking back on the original permit denials or whatever they are, we're looking at the old law that was done under. and then we're firmly within qualified immunity, I assume, but that's our debate. The unconstitutionality would have to be, we would have to confront this prior restraint commercial speech issue?
I believe so, yes.
How would that be clearly established, even if we agreed with you?
Well, I think we'd back up to one thing, which is to say that I don't think there's much debate that if it's content neutral, there you can have prior restraint, even then with some protections. What we have here is a content-based regulation. You have, I'm looking at the sign. I mean, what, if you look at the emails, it's pretty clear what happened is. We said it's okay if it's on-premises. Well, then can we have off-premises that's not facing the interstate? Sure. Figure out later on, they changed their mind and said, well, that's not actually apparently what that...
But what's your best... Go ahead. What's your best case that this is clearly established, to go back to Judge Nalbandian's question? And remember, Wesby and its progeny say we have to look at the, you have to have a case on almost all fours. Mm. And I didn't see a case really close to this one, such that an official would know that he couldn't deny it.
Well, I think the case that we cite in our reply suggests that it doesn't exactly have to be on all fours.
Which case are you talking about?
It's in our reply brief. We cited it at length. But
what's your best case?
The best case is it's not content neutral. And if it's content neutral...
No, I mean, give me a Supreme Court case or...
Oh,
a
well...
The best case that it's clearly established that the officer can't act in this way.
Thomas versus the City of Chicago Park case says you can have content neutral provisions. But you even then, you have to have some ability that they're reasonably measurable, reasonably determinable, and that there is some period of time that you can seek judicial relief. We have nothing here, absolutely nothing. You have the ability to deny, take away our billboard, which is what happened, or at least the one side of it, with absolutely no appeal rights. ODOT admits it. We have no right to an appeal. So you have, and what's happening, by the way, is then on the other side of things, we're being prevented from speech, both commercial and non-commercial speech, on these other billboards, until we capitulate over here with no appeal rights. So my point is, even under content-neutral regulations, which this is not, you're entitled to some protections under the Thomas versus Chicago City Park case. And so that's the argument. And what we...
In the absence of some clear case that says what Mr. Fling did was a violation that was clearly established, he's entitled to qualified immunity, isn't he?
I don't think so. I don't think it has to be a case on all fours. The general proposition has not been, I don't think, challenged that you can't have content-based regulations.
Thomas isn't even close to on all fours. Is it even a billboard case? I thought that
no,
was the Parks
it's a,
case.
It's a Parks case, and that's what, and which is entitled to frankly less protection because it's on public grounds. We're entitled to more protection under the City of Troy case.
But under the clearly established law, what case do you have that's similar?
Well, I can look at the City of International Outdoor versus City of Troy, where it says, to be constitutional, a prior restraint must be content neutral, narrowly tailored to serve a significant government interest, and leave open ample alternatives for communication, citing the Forsyth City case from 1992.
That's not a billboard case either, is it?
International Outdoor is a billboard case, yeah, versus City of Troy.
Do you think that case... there's some interesting language in that case, and I would say there's some language that's favorable for you in that mm-hmm. case. Do you think, though, I think it makes clear that it involved non-commercial and commercial speech. Do you agree with that?
It did.
Okay, and your argument under the old law here was advertising device. That's just commercial, right?
It's commercial speech.
Okay, so we're really not in that world, are we?
Well, but if looking at the, I mean, there's two elements to the International Outdoor case. There was the content-based discrimination element, but there was also the prior restraint piece, and that's what we're focusing on. And I don't think that part of the case hinged on whether or not it was commercial or non-commercial. I don't think the notion that a prior restraint has to be content neutral is up to much debate. It's been around for quite a while. The issue then here is it content neutral? The answer is no, because again, they have to look.
The issue here is whether, for you, would be whether prior restraint, the normal prior restraint regime applies to truthful commercial speech, right? The restriction of truthful commercial speech. And It seems to me that we took care of that in that in discount tobacco with fairly broad language. If I'm so, not only is it not clearly established, it's just not. It's not correct, right?
I'm not sure I understand the latter part.
I mean, I don't understand where how your argument wouldn't be foreclosed by. Is it discount tobacco?
Discount tobacco was the, yeah, but that was targeting.
I mean, that's untruthful speech. That's a commercial speech case.
Correct.
We say we're not applying prior normal prior restraint law. We're just going to apply, you know, commercial speech law, right? And your argument is no, it didn't go to truthful. It didn't. It wasn't really. There's a distinction between truthfulness and non-truthful commercial speech and prior restraint, the what we normally view as the kind of the prior restraint regime applies if you're not talking about, if you're talking about truthful speech, I take it?
Right. I mean, there's no question here that the billboard at issue here, nobody's suggesting that it was going to be putting false
advertising. Right, but I guess my question is, where do we get that? I mean, well, I understand your distinction. It's creative, let's say. Where do I look to support that?
Well, if you look at Central Hudson, the first part of Central Hudson, and even under the intermediate scrutiny, was does it involve truthful speech? If it doesn't, you don't get, you know, the protections of the Central Hudson and intermediate scrutiny. So, again, the protection. What we're essentially saying here, I think, if the decision of ODOT is endorsed, is there is no protection for commercial speech in Ohio, I guess, or in this district, in this circuit, because there you can take it away, which is what happened, without any mechanism, zero. The only mechanism is to say, well, you can seek mandamus. Well, how long is that going to take? It's going to take a long time. There's no defined period of time.
Wouldn't you get a challenge under Central Hudson?
Pardon?
Wouldn't you get a challenge under Central Hudson? I mean, it would be commercial speech, so wouldn't you be able, would you could have briefed it that way, right?
Well, I think that is, it's commercial speech on just sort of content-based. We're talking about the prior restraint and the mechanism. It's focused more on the mechanism as opposed to exactly what is said. I mean, it's certainly an element of it because it establishes that it's not content-neutral.
Why couldn't you have challenged the reg under saying it violated Central Hudson? Why did you chose a path that was the prior restraint path, which is fine. That's your case. You get to argue it however you want. I'm just saying you could have argued. I mean, the state went ahead in their brief and said, oh, by the way, you would lose anyway. But I think they're right. You're not arguing the case that way, right?
Well, we argued it in the alternative at the district. I mean, we did advance argument to the district.
But here. Here
no, we're primarily arguing commercial speech. Yeah. Or, I'm sorry, prior restraint. See if my time's up.
Thank you.
Good morning, and may it please the court. So this case has thus far proceeded mostly in twos. We have two claims, two different advertising definitions, but now I have one reason why this court should affirm the district court, and that is because all roads lead us to intermediate scrutiny. Now, I just mentioned that this is a two-by-two matrix that we're dealing with, so I just want to take a step back and sort of frame the issue. So,
Can I just ask you a preliminary question, which is why shouldn't we remand on the new law to the district court since the state has the burden and of showing that it, you know, it meets their needs, and we don't have any of that in front of us right now other than what you've said in your 28J, in effect?
Well, it's unnecessary, Your Honor, because what has been challenged by Kenjo today is the compliance rule. Now, that does have an interplay with the advertising definition, but not so much that it substantially alters the nature of the controversy here today. And more practically, it doesn't change anything for us because where we end up is in the same level of scrutiny, intermediate scrutiny.
Right, but under that intermediate scrutiny, you still need to meet narrow tailoring, right?
No, Your Honor. With intermediate scrutiny, what we're looking for is a reasonable fit.
Right, but it's very similar in this context to whatever the promotes the government interest or whatever the language is.
Directly advances substantial government interest.
And so if you had a restriction that was, if this new rule was very under-inclusive, for example, are you saying that would not pose any problem under intermediate scrutiny?
That's right, Your Honor. What we're looking for is a substantial fit, and there's no need for us to look towards the least restrictive means of accomplishing the government's dual substantial goals.
So what if private and commercial billboards were 50% each? You're saying you still meet intermediate, meaning paid for and non-paid for?
That's right, Your Honor, because what we're looking to do as a state is to preserve traffic safety and preserve the aesthetics of the city. So what...
Can you draw any arbitrary line as long as it met some safety goal based on targeting speakers? So if you said only white people can put up billboards, that would be okay? Put aside the discrimination. That would just be okay as an arbitrary line because it would stop some billboards from going up?
No, that's not correct, Your Honor. I do think that would not directly advance the government's interests. And
It would prevent 85% of billboards from going up.
I mean, but then, Your Honor, we get into the problem that we just set aside, which is the discrimination.
Okay, pick a non-suspect class.
Sure.
Redheads can't put up billboards. It does advance your goal, right?
That's right, Your Honor. It would.
So that would be okay.
Well, I don't think that's right because then we get into the question of whether or not it directly advances it, and I'm not so sure whether that particular classification
would be. Why wouldn't any ban, even a partial ban, directly advance your goal, which is to put up fewer billboards?
In this case, what we're looking to is commercial operators, and I take your point, Judge Thapar, where you said, what if it's only 50%? But that's for the state to decide what's the best and most effective way to directly advance its
goals.
What if
it's 10%?
Well, in that case, I think the argument would be under intermediate scrutiny. Well, the argument Kenjo would have to make is under intermediate scrutiny, that particular distinction does not advance a substantial government interest. And we would need to get to whether or not the particular distinction that is being made is effective at directly advancing the interest. Here it is. And here there's pretty much no argument that commercial...
Why wouldn't we remand that? I mean, we couldn't resolve that at that point, could we?
Well,
I mean, the laws change. We don't know how effective it is. It honestly, to me, it makes no sense at all. I mean, I could have a political billboard. If I put it up myself, it's fine. If I have to pay somebody to put it up, it's out. It just seems like an odd distinction to me. But who knows? Don't we have to give that back? Because if you're going to advance arguments about how, you know, effective it is, district court has to resolve that, right?
Well, that's why I would like to take a step back and frame the way that this case has proceeded, because first of all, this particular compliance rule that is being challenged here does not even need to be addressed under an intermediate scrutiny, because the prior restraint doctrine theory that has been advanced does not apply to the prior definition of advertising device as it interplays with compliance rule. Now, answering your question...
Wait a minute. So you're talking about... So his the injunction claim, the old injunction claim is out, right?
Okay. That would be correct.
What does that have to do with whether how the interplay between a legal device and the compliance rule now works? In other words, they didn't know when they filed the complaint what the only thing they had was the old law. So they advanced this prior restraint theory.
Mm-hmm.
In theory, had they known what the new law was, maybe they would have advanced a different theory. It would seem unfair not to give them an opportunity in the district court to do that. I mean, the damages obviously are different. So why wouldn't we just remand it? I mean, it seems like your argument is, well, it's going to be intermediate scrutiny anyway, so you can resolve it. And I'm struggling with how we could resolve it without having a record on it.
Well, two reasons, Your Honor. The state is sort of between a rock and a hard place, because anytime we have cases where we have full bans on billboards, that would restrict more speech than necessary, would not survive any form of
scrutiny.
We're
not saying you lose. We're just saying, well, he's asking why should, he's not saying you lose ultimately. He's saying why shouldn't the district court decide in the first instance? Because even you agree you can't come up with some crazy arbitrary distinction, and the burden, even in intermediate scrutiny, rests on the government. So why not remand it and let that be done in the first instance on the new rule, which no one's litigated under? Because they still want their billboard, and I'm sure you're going to tell me their billboard still isn't permitted under the new rule, because I can read the new rule. So they want to show that you haven't met intermediate scrutiny. Why shouldn't that happen in the district court?
I'm not going to resist a remand if that's what this court thinks is appropriate. But I will say that I don't think that is necessary, because the way that the advertising definition has changed does not really alter the core of what we're arguing about today. And although Ms. Kenjo has forfeited any arguments about the new rule and has forfeited any arguments about...
Explain that to me, how it's fair that Ohio could change the rule and then say you forfeited.
Well, Your Honor, in its response to the 28J letter, Kenjo has essentially doubled down on the assertion that what applies is the old compliance rule, which we disagree with, because that does not make much sense.
Through a 28J letter, you can forfeit the argument?
I think because, not forfeiture, maybe even affirmative waiver, because Kenjo does not seem to want to argue that the new rule applies at all, except here for the first time in this court.
Well, it just shows y'all have a dispute as to whether what effect the new advertising device definition is, but of course that's why we think maybe a remand would be appropriate.
Once again, Your Honors, to the extent the court thinks that a remand would be appropriate, I'm not going to resist that, because we would still answer the same points that we
maybe
have
you
to
can
make.
Tell me, I'm just curious, do you know why the Ohio legislature changed the definition of advertising device? I mean, who would put up a sign without compensation?
Well, to Judge Nalbandian's example, it could possibly be that you just want to put up a sign advertising, or I can't really speculate on why you would want to put up a big sign on a highway, but you may want to do that.
A lot when you drive up.
Right. I mean,
homemade
the road to hell billboards may or may not be paid for.
Exactly. So I'm not going to speculate on...
Funny what he remembers.
I'm not going to speculate on why somebody would put up a billboard of their own.
I mean, do you have any idea? Is there anything in the record of why the Ohio legislature made the definition to add, okay, now it's just going to be any billboard that's owned or operated by a person for compensation?
No, there's no such, there's no evidence in the record as to why that has been amended. That's correct, Your Honor.
More reason for the district court to try to get
But I do want to come back to the core issues that we are looking at here, which is that the compliance rule, whichever way we look at it, should fall under intermediate scrutiny. And because it does directly...
What do we do with international outdoor?
International outdoor is uncontroversial, does not change your position, and it in fact creates a bright line rule that supports our position. The key rule...
You're kind of defensive about it in your briefing, though.
Well, I think the defensive is not the right word, Your Honor. Of course, we're working within the precedence of this court. And the bright line rule that's created in international outdoor is very succinctly restated in Lion's Den, in which the court says, content-based statutes that sweep in commercial and non-commercial speech alike are subject to strict scrutiny across the board. That's just what we have. Okay, but that means two things must be satisfied. One, it must be a content-based statute, and two, it must sweep in commercial and non-commercial speech alike. Now, under the prior rule, it did not sweep in non-commercial speech. Under the current rule, it is not content-based. It is a wholly content-neutral regulation, which means what we have here is something that does not satisfy the particular bright-line rule that was created in international outdoor. That does not conflict with anything the state is saying today. And so to the extent that we are bound by the precedent of international outdoor, which we are, we still end up...
Basically, you're saying it's not content-based anymore.
That's correct. The new definition is a wholly content-neutral
I mean, I'm not sure the first one was content. I mean, all commercial speech is content-based in some sense, I guess.
That is correct, but it only swept in commercial speech in that instance.
But the current rule, say whatever you want about whether I think it's rational or irrational, it's certainly content-neutral. That's the point.
That is correct, Your Honor. Okay. And for that reason, we are...
So it would be a time, place, and manner restriction or a permit-type case or whatever it is that we would look... Parade permit-type case where we would just look at...
That's correct. This would be a content-neutral time, place, and manner regulation. And it would require adequate safeguards at that point because the prior restraint doctrine, as Your Honor just indicated, would come back into play here. But I want to resist one point that Kenjo has brought up here, saying that there are no adequate safeguards. Well, that's absolutely not true. First of all, the case that Kenjo cited, Thomas versus Chicago Park, in that the adequate safeguards that are mentioned are clear explanations for reasons of denial. Specific reasons for denial is really a bright line rule that Justice Scalia puts in Thomas. Okay, well, when you look at the June 21st, 2018 letter that was sent by Nathan Fling, there are clear reasons for the denial.
It sounds like they got the runaround, though, or they got some bad advice early on. Do you agree with that?
Not with respect to the rule that they violated, which is you cannot put a billboard
but
within
they,
5 years.
I thought they said you can put a billboard as long as you meet these requirements, and they met those, and then they said there's a different rule about interchanges or whatever after the fact.
That's not right, Your Honor. That rule was always there. It was up.
No, but when they advise them, right? Person number one says you can do it as long as you meet X, Y, and Z. They go ahead and do it, and then they say, wait a minute, you're violating one side of it or whatever is violating this interchange rule.
They never asked about the 500-foot rule, though. At no point did Jones say that you can put a billboard within 500 feet. That is just black letter regulations that.
So it wasn't specific to the site. The question wasn't specific to the site, the initial question.
That's correct. It was not specific to the physical location from the interchange. So that rule was violated. And once again, I think, Judge Thapar, you said this in a previous argument, we like bright lines, and that is a bright line rule that was
not all
violated.
Of us like bright lines.
I think specifically Justice Scalia, who wrote Thomas, likes bright lines. And this is a bright line rule that was violated. So as to the entire discussion about there being no adequate safeguards, that's wholly not correct. So now taking a step back again, the compliance rule passes intermediate scrutiny, both under the prior definition and under the new definition. It has adequate safeguards with the new definition, and it is a completely permissible content-neutral restriction, time, place, and manner restriction. Now, briefly, we just want to turn to the qualified immunity portion of this case as well. For the reasons we've stated in our brief, for the reasons that we've been talking about here, first of all, there was no constitutional right that was violated. And if this court were to disagree with that, there's no such clearly established constitutional right that was violated on June 21st, 2018. I mean, Kenjo was unable to bring up a case that squarely fits the particular circumstances. Beyond that, there is absolutely no reason why qualified immunity should not attach to Mr. Fling's, to the money damages against Mr. Fling. If there are no more questions, this court, we ask that you affirm the decision of the district court below.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
I think you have 3 minutes, counsel. Am I right?
That is correct. Thank you. May it please the court again. I'll be very brief. We have no objection to remanding this so that we can explore the constitutionality of the new rule. I don't think we've had a fair opportunity to deal with that, as was pointed out. The Thomas versus City of Chicago case, what was not mentioned there is that there are provisions there to have an appeal. We have none. I mean, even now under this rule in...
What about mandamus?
Well, I mean, that's not prompt. I don't know there's the ability under certain rules to seek prompt relief, but you know, our view of it, looking at some of the cases that had mandamus the last couple of years, I mean, the cases are pretty specific that if you're going to have a prior restraint, you need to have a defined time limit. And so prompt, whether that's mandamus, it's not defined. In the city of Chicago...
But isn't that true for any court review? I mean...
Well, we're talking about First Amendment, though, so you're quashing speech.
Right, but there's no time limit otherwise.
Well, there, if you, and I can't point to the case.
But I mean, mandamus is like just, I mean, it's obviously it's an extraordinary remedy, but in Ohio, it's viewed, it's used a lot as kind of just a review proceeding, right? So, I mean, it wouldn't be that different than just filing an appeal.
But you don't have, but you, you, I don't know if that goes directly to the, to your Supreme Court or directly to the trial court, but either way, you don't have a defined mechanism. So our client looks at this and says, well, you tell me to take this down, or I'm going to be withheld from speaking over here for some indefinite period of time. The choice was made. I mean, because you can't look and say, oh, I can appeal this, I can make my arguments and figure that out. In the meantime, I can get my permits, which is the status quo. we view the significant issue is there's just absolutely no safeguards other than the mandamus, and I acknowledge that's there. If our client in that position or somebody else in the future, even under this new provision, says, I'm going to challenge whether or not, you know, I'm leasing, there's all going to be all kinds of ways that to probably try to get around that rule, frankly, about what constitutes somebody that would satisfy that rule. But even then, if there's a question about it, what happens is the other permits are being held in abeyance when I can't speak commercial, non-commercial, the whole ball of wax, and there's absolutely no provision under Ohio law that would say, here's how you challenge that. And I would respectfully submit, again, under and especially that City of Troy case, it says if it's content neutral, even then you have to have some safeguards. You can't just have none, which is the case here. So we would ask, I guess that we would remand the case. We start under the new ordinance and go from there.
Okay.
Thank you,
counsel. Case will be submitted. Thank you all for your arguments. I think the other cases are submitted on the briefs, so we're done.
This honorable court is now adjourned.
You pick go to hell, whatever those are, the road to hell.
You're welcome. Thank you.